This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome to the Ankler Podcast. This is Sean McNulty of the Wake Up Newsletter here at the Ankler here in New York City on Thursday, April 18th. I'm joined by Elaine Lowe and Richard Rushfield in Los Angeles, who is back. And I can tell from the look in Richard's eye, he's either still in a sugar high from CinemaCon or he did really well at the slots in Vegas. Richard, which one is it?
I'm still feeling the deep fried chicken and cheese with hot honey hot dog that I had.
That'll repeat on you for a while. Yeah.
What happens in Vegas, you end up taking home from Vegas sometimes. So.
Yeah.
The real question is, how much candy did you bring home, Richard?
Oh, right. Elaine wanted to know. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Give us the full rundown.
So they give you a goodie bag. This year was the goodie bag was sponsored by Paramount, filled with candy, which is the size of a pretty large pillowcase.
Oh, my.
And I have two children, so there may have been two full goodie bags returning with me to the house there.
The luggage stays in Vegas, Elaine. So, yeah, just got to bring the candy back. No room for the luggage. Yeah.
So the children are not going to sleep for the next 2 weeks.
My candy haul weighed more than my clothes and suitcase did. So, coming back.
That's a sign of a good trip right there. All right. Well, just a reminder, of course, you can catch the Ankler crew over on LA's number one NPR station every week, every Thursday. That's, of course, Southern California Public Radio's flagship radio station, 89.3 LAS, throughout the day on Entertainment Thursday programming across Morning Edition, Air Talk, and All Things Considered. And you can reach us here at the pod anytime at podcasts@theankler.com. In just a little bit today, we'll have a new contributor to the Ankler family joining us. That would be Ashley Collins, who launched a new column this week called Dealmakers. And she dove into what is being done to protect and enable talent in the burgeoning world of AI. And another shout out to check out a piece from David Litsky here, looking at Participant, which is a company started by tech mogul Jeff Skoll, who made several big movies over the past two decades of the company's existence, including the Oscar winners Spotlight and Green Book. He unfortunately announced that the company is going to shut down this week. So David took a look at what's afoot there and what the company was trying to achieve in Hollywood, which is kind of movies that matter. Richard, what was he thinking?
You know, a billionaire comes to Hollywood with the ideas that they can do it better. He in particular came in like wanting to do good and wanting to make some venerable things, but no billionaire actually believes they're going to lose money. They all say that they're willing to lose money because what's money to them? They're billionaires after all. But when you discover year after year that you're losing lots of money and your fortune is slowly seeping away to pay your branding department and God knows, Participant was an extremely well-staffed organization there. That sort of, you know, you didn't become a billionaire to have a bunch of show people rob you blind in the end. So,
yeah, they had I think it was over 100 people who were working there at present time. So,
which is a big team for
a production company
Company of movies that weren't making vast fortunes there,
right. Right.
And when they got into it, there was this kind of brief period where sort of anti-George Bush fervor coincided with people going to see a lot of little movies. So there was this brief boomlet for documentaries and sort of political themed documentaries. But that was really anomaly in history and soon passed.
And David does a great job diving into the changes in the businesses that happened both in that genre, Richard, and also just at large in terms of streaming business coming in and changing the math on a lot of things. So a good piece from David to check out over there at theankler.com. And just a quick note about recording. We are recording here as we always do on Thursday afternoon. Today is Netflix Q1 earnings day, and I can tell by Richard's temporary face tattoo, I hope that's temporary, that he's very excited about that. But that'll be taking place after we record, so you can check out all the numbers and details to know there in my Friday edition of The Wake Up over at theankler.com.
And you can tell us what was in the goodie bag.
In the goodie bag at the earnings call, yes, exactly. Yeah, far there'll definitely be no CinemaCon, that's for sure. So, but Elaine, over in your Serious Business column this week, you've got a lot of attention. And with a title like Five TV Agents Reveal What's Selling Now, but that'll do it, I think. Yeah. So, Elaine, what is selling besides reboots of early mid-90s and early 2000s IP? I love this. I love this quote you described, the vibe, the current vibe out there from TV executives on the buying side, the quote being, we'll take it or leave it completely alone, was kind of the vibe of what people are facing.
Yeah, let me tell you, talking to these five agents from across the major agencies around town, we already know it's a tough market out there. But the idea now is that basically an idea has to come in fully formed in order for a buyer to say, okay, we love it, we'll take it, we'll take the whole thing, or else, no. And you know, what I've been told is, like, in the past, if somebody came in with a great idea or a great script, but there was, you know, maybe 10% of it was sort of off the mark, off what the buyer was looking for, they would say, okay, well, like, let's just redevelop it and let's rework some part of it. Now, what I've heard from multiple agents is that there's a real trepidation in bringing in something that doesn't seem to match exactly what the buyer wants. Mm-hmm. Because if there's something that's even, you know, 5-10% off, they're more likely to just say, no thanks, it's a pass for us, rather than saying, like, hey, let's bring it in and workshop it. Like, you would think development people and writers might do.
Well, I think, yeah, I'm just thinking out loud a couple of factors there. Number one, with all the layoffs, there's fewer executives in development or things like that. That, you know, the time allocation there may not be what it once was. And two, if they're not making as many series, and again, we're seeing what the new number will be, but in a sense, they may have more pitches coming in. They could be more choosy, Elaine, about, all right, well, where before, I don't have the time and I have a lot of incoming volume, so I'm not going to take that pitch that is at 85%. I'm going to wait for that 100 because I'm pretty sure it's out there. And I know, you know, that sentiment it makes sense when you track about the larger trends, which you've written about a lot as well, as to what's going on around town.
I think that's totally plausible. Although at the same time, and I, without being able to identify the studio, I did hear one story of, well, there was this one concept that was brought in, but the theme was slightly overlapping with something that they had already ordered. And even though this new idea, you know, that initial theme wasn't sort of central to it, mm-hmm. they were just like, we love this writer, but no thank you. So this is happening to established writers. And more than one agent told me, listen, executives around town, they're so scared about possibly losing their jobs in this environment in the wake of all the M&A, all the layoffs, everything else we've seen over the last couple of years. And they're just scared to take swings. So there's just more fear than there's ever been. And I feel like we sort of come back to this idea every 6 months, but instead of dissipating where it is now, it only seems to be building.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you do a lot of great breakdowns here. I'll just bring a couple of points to move things along. But it's, you know, historical dramas, limited historical dramas were hot for a while. It feels like that was a no-go. Certainly we have Apple just released Franklin, this week or this month. They just did Manhunt, which was about the Lincoln assassination. And, you know, Matt McFadden has that President Garfield assassination show from the Game of Thrones guys on Netflix, but maybe not. Maybe that was more of a mark of an era from the past, Elaine, versus what people want to do more of at this point.
Right? Didn't it seem like period pieces and limited series were like super in like 3 years ago? You're like Nicole Kidman limited series. You're like big period piece. And now all I keep hearing is like, we don't want period, we don't want limited, and we especially don't want period limited. And as one agent told me, she was like, listen, if you want to do a period limited show, the odds of that selling are like the odds of me becoming Jeff Bezos. And I was like, oh, okay, so.
Okay, got it.
So okay, no limited, no period. Got it, okay.
So what they want is network television of 2009.
Exactly. People want elevated procedurals. They want hard funny comedies, a phrase that I have to keep using in this context.
I know.
Hard funny. Hard funny means LOL funny, not like dramedy, sadcom, is this really a comedy? Although, that said, what's the most critically acclaimed comedy out there right now? It's The Bear, which people love. And
this is a great
nobody
quote
wants
had.
Another The Bear, apparently.
Yeah, the only, this is a quote in your piece, the only person who buys The Bear right now would be the same person who bought it before, John Landgraf. Which is telling, because it's like, yeah, that's literally the only person who would want that right now.
Right. And the thing that I don't understand that I was asking some of these agents is, how do you reconcile the idea that The Bear and Beef and Succession are these critically acclaimed darlings, and people just have nothing
but Emmys.
People are watching it too, and yet all you see on the buying side is like, we want procedurals, we want hard funny broadcast style comedies, and we want things that appeal to the broadest audience possible. And one agent told me, you know, I can't reconcile it. I don't know. She was like, it baffles me every single day. And another agent was saying, like, it's so disheartening to see Melrose Place getting rebooted all of my clients have these terrific original ideas, but this is the thing that makes it through the gate.
Yeah. No, we went through that list last week,
I'd say also terrible. TV development being what it is, they want the shows to come in fully formed and complete, and then the first meeting they have after they buy it will be we've got some notes.
Yeah,
on
exactly.
This.
Yeah.
does this really have to be about doctors?
And can we move it overseas, right, Elaine? Yeah, exactly. Can this be in the UK? Yeah.
Although, speaking of doctors, procedurals. Procedurals is a new term I heard this week. You know, I love introducing the new industry jargon to you all.
What the kids are saying out there, yeah.
Yeah, so the kids are saying procedurals are in right now, especially at Netflix, which ordered its first medical procedural, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
My favorite show that's set in Miami and being shot in New Mexico. So yes, I always love that production technique.
And apparently, a procedural is something that I guess has a larger budget, has big stars. This is what I've been told, everyone.
Yeah, it's Grey's Anatomy. Okay, guys, it's not new. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, congratulations. Yeah. you reinvented Grey's Anatomy. But hey, what's the most popular thing on Netflix? Grey's Anatomy. Like, it's not even, I'm not even knocking it. I'm like,
it's not rocket science.
It's not rocket science. Sometimes you just lean into it, you know, lean into what people are telling you. So the Hello Larry reboot did not come up yet, Elaine. Is that fair to say?
No, but let me go back to my sources and ask them about
somebody wants to know, Elaine. I'm not saying who it is. I'm just, you know, there was a listener email about that. So if you would check that out.
I mean, if you've got a place on your mantle for all those Emmys, that you get, but
hear me out. What about this? An elevated Hello Larry reboot.
All right, get on it, man. No. That's it. I think we're on to something here. You also, we kind of break down, you know, by streamer as well in the piece. We were just having to touch on a couple of them here, but you know, Amazon looking for a sense of humor. just kidding, Amazon. You know, I love you guys. But comedy is on their agenda. That something came up, right?
Yeah, give me those hard, funny comedies is apparently what they've been telling sellers out there. And also what, as one agent, not me, as one agent describes Amazon's shows jokingly as white man with a gun shows, like your Jack Reacher and Jack Ryan, all of your good dad TV stuff out there has been working for them. And apparently is what they continue to want, as well as genre, because we know that Amazon plays in that space with Lord of the Rings and The Boys and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And what also, I guess, Max is a bit of a question mark, Elaine, these days. There's a few good quotes in there on that one, too.
You know, I was like, what do they want? And one agent was like, I don't know. You tell me when you find out. But DC is big for them. They're mining their IP, which we've already seen from what's been greenlighted, what's been ordered. So they're definitely looking in-house. But otherwise, I think they're also looking at procedurals. Again, procedurals having a big moment right now, as well as some of these more female-skewing shows, kind of like the Gossip Girl type variety things.
Gotcha. Well, Elaine, another great read. You go again, break down by streamer Disney Plus, Hulu, HBO, and more there in Elaine's piece to check out over at theankler.com. And Richard, just one final note here on TV series for you. Your tireless campaigning for on Apple's behalf has finally paid off. Not only is For All Mankind renewed for a fifth season, but it's getting a spinoff.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite shows of the last period, whatever this is. It's a great show, and miracles can happen in the streaming era. I'm not sure who watches it, but apparently enough to justify another Apple season.
Okay. And Richard, also just, we talked a little bit about this during the week here. You know, there's a big piece in New York Times this week about Netflix films 2.0, kind of, you know, more intel into the Dan Lin era, kind of, you know, with, quote, people familiar with the thinking, or whatever the current term people is used for people around the situation. So things that we've kind of out there already about tighter budgets and things like that, but anything stand out for you in terms of this? You've been early on the Netflix films new era here. What was your take on that?
Well, it's dividing the film group up in the way that Hollywood was arranged at the very beginning. You know, you would back at the beginning of Hollywood, you had people that just wrote chase scenes and you had people that just wrote romantic banter. So now they're dividing it up into groups by genre, which is, it's kind of the way, if you look at it, that studios are arranged with their producers. Like the Universal, for instance, has, they have two animation divisions, and they have Blumhouse that specializes in comedy. And then they have sort of people in charge of their Fast and their Jurassic worlds there. So it's the thing that, as an advocate for comedy, the thing that makes me happy is if they have a comedy division, it will ensure that they keep making comedies. And don't forget to make comedies this decade, like a lot of the studios have.
Yeah, I broke that down a little further, you know, again, cross-referencing that list, as you mentioned, Richard, in the Wake Up. But yeah, that was, comedy stood out for me, and it was separate from rom-com. They make plenty of rom-coms, but it wasn't just a rom-com department, it was also a comedy. They have, you know, they've done, I mean, Adam Sandler and Kevin Hart are two of their biggest stars, but outside of that, that's kind of, you know, been most of what they're doing. But last year, you know, they had a movie called The Outlaws with Adam Devine and Pierce Brosnan, which was one of their, you know, biggest hits of the year. And certainly No Hard Feelings from Sony did a huge number. That was the Jennifer Lawrence comedy from Sony, did a huge number on Netflix. So I think I'm with you. We are the kind of R-rated or a couple big comedy fans, certainly the R-rated variety. So I hope that they take that same lesson. And it seems like from this organization that's the case, Richard.
Yeah, and presumably you'll have divisions that develop expertise and relations with talent within that slice of Hollywood, and it won't all just go in a grab bag, and you can presumably do better there, which was the idea of Hollywood way back when. So
yeah, and a couple other genres that they haven't played in really from a Netflix film's original standpoint, horror and faith-based were also, you know, specifically, you know, in those new categories. So we'll see what Dan is going to be afoot doing there.
And in the future, we'll see what their priorities are as they de-emphasize certain divisions and bring in new ones. And you can track where all this is going.
Exactly. So you can get the details there from my Wake Up column earlier this week as well. But all right, coming up next, Ashley Collins is going to join us to discuss the first installment of her new Dealmakers column. And we'll dive into a little Civil War with Richard. Elaine, I really hope that's about the movie and not something else. But we'll find out when we return in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All right, so we have two new names here to know at the Ankler this week. The first is Katie Rich, who is coming over from Vanity Fair to be the Ankler's new awards editor. And she'll also be running the Prestige Junkie newsletter, which she'll be seeing more of soon. And the second name is Ashley Collins, who is heading up our new Dealmakers newsletter for our paid subscribers. And she is also joining me right now. Ashley, welcome to the pod.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to meet you. So what can folks expect from Dealmakers?
It is a look at all of the behind-the-scenes movements that make everything in Hollywood happen. It's conversations with lawyers and agents and managers about all of the things that go into making or not making deals in Hollywood.
So a lot of deal points, percentages, you know, no, eventually, a wide array of topics for sure. And you started off with a great one for your launch column this week, looking at a topic that, you know, I often discuss in The Wake Up, which is AI, something that's either the future of our business or the death of it, depending upon who you're talking to around town, it seems like. But you looked at a great facet of this that it comes up a lot in meetings I have with people in the sense that, yes, okay, AI is coming. You can bury your head in the sand or protest as you like, but, you know, man shakes fist at cloud always works out for the cloud, you know. So at the core of this, in terms of Hollywood, though, I think is a lot of it comes down to protecting the rights of artists. You know, it's how do I maintain my likeness, my voice, my presence, my control of, you know, my image and who I am, and, you know, and protecting that, whether it be in deals or in content and looping and whatever it might be. So when it comes to protecting rights, that means lawyers. So where did you start in your world, your journey into the world of AI rights protection in Hollywood?
Yeah, so I spoke with a few talent lawyers who are at the intersection of this. Darren Trattner, who works with both writers and actors, Tara Cole, same. Lev Ginsberg, also same. They're sort of seeing it from both sides, from the talent side and the writer side and the director side, because every group has different concerns when it comes to AI. But at the end of the day, we're sort of at a point where there's like a reluctant acceptance that this is here, and just nobody wants to be surprised by it. Nobody wants to go in for a scan for a Marvel movie or whatever, and then later find it used for something else. So we're sort of at a place where they're just trying to make sure there's as much transparency as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't want to, I'll put it this way, maybe not the ideal way, but I mean, frankly, one element that maybe be a real part of this going forward is, you know, I'll say shaming, for lack of a better term, where, you know, just because a company can do something as a part of a contract, you know, actually doing it and pissing off a lot of folks could discourage future business. And that's a topic that kind of came up in your conversations, no?
Yeah, it's interesting because during all of last year, I feel like all of the conversations were, oh, we're afraid the studios are going to do X, Y, and Z. And now everyone seems to be at a place where they realize that, yes, you know, they may be looking for ways to leverage this technology, but at the end of the day, the studios, the networks, they have relationships with these people and with their representatives. And just because they can do something doesn't mean it's going to be well received. And so a lot of the biggest areas of concern are actually from people and companies outside of the entertainment ecosystem who aren't bound by those same contracts and niceties.
Right. What? It's not all US-based, Ashley? I thought the entertainment business was all here.
It's, you know, yeah, it's on. All like within this little radius.
Yeah, it kind of brought the term to mind. International waters was the term that came to mind reading your piece, where, you know, just because you can't make a movie starring Tom Hanks without Tom Hanks's permission in the U.S. does not mean in other countries that may not be the case. So that's really a forefront of the conversation as well here in your reporting.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the conversations have been over the years with piracy.
There are some
things you can do in some places, but a lot of it is just a free-for-all.
There's no court of law, right, yeah.
There needs to be some international cooperation on this front, and thankfully the EU tends to be sort of ahead of the game when it comes to all things tech.
They're beating the US most of the time in this legislation. I think the EU is where we're concerned about, maybe some other players in the field, but yeah, there may not. That's probably a bigger topic. But, you know, is it, this is another thought I had reading the piece, but, you know, is it safe to say the A-list will kind of be on the forefront of these battles in the next few years, like, you know, AKA people with leverage, or, you know, is that something that maybe is coming up? And I don't know if they mean about being said, but maybe between the lines, or what's your take on that?
Leverage is a spectrum, right? Like, there are some
You sound like an agent right now. That's great. Leverage is a spectrum, see? And you don't have any. No. Go ahead.
Well, like, there are some people who have the power to say no.
Right.
And then there are a lot of people who you might think would have the power to say no, but are interchangeable, or at least there's a perception that they're interchangeable with other people at that same level. Mm. And there is some concern that, okay, well, if this actor says, no, I'm not going to let you scan me and keep my scan to do whatever with it, then I'll just move on to this person who, you know, you're up against in auditions all of the time.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, in terms of like protections of that, like, how do you not let that happen? But it's hard to really quantify that that's what it was, or they just went in a different direction, you know, as the famous line, you know, kind of goes in casting. So that's interesting that kind of came up.
Yeah. And there's sort of a sense that a lot of people aren't going to want to walk away from a deal over this.
Yeah. What's the line of the sand for you? You know, and is it, you can use my voice, you can't use my likeness, or things, you know, you can get down to some minutiae here in these deals. So that's probably the scariest part, at least for the, for the actors. Every guild has their own, you know, issues with AI in that sense. But CAA is coming to the rescue. Ashley, what's their new venture here?
It's actually really cool. So CAA's vault is basically digital avatar replicas.
That's what they call it, by the way. This is like a real name, by the way. I want to clarify. It's called The Vault. Okay.
Yeah, that's The Vault. And they haven't disclosed how many of their clients have come in and done this, but I do know that it's people across like the spectrum. And it's not, you know, so not just actors. Like, they have a lot of athletes in other areas of business within CAA, and they see this as something that would benefit all of their clients, regardless of, like, which sector they're right. in.
And this is image. Yes. What's the process? What's the process here?
Image, movement, voice, all wow. of it. And then the client owns it.
Okay.
So the client determines if and when it can be used. But it exists.
Right. For example, you have a Travis Kelce example in your piece.
Yeah. So if, you know, he's just a little bit busy because reasons, and he would normally want to say yes to a brand opportunity that involved a 5-day shoot, but he's only got room in his schedule for a day or two, then theoretically, he could turn to this already existing scan of himself and fill in the gaps.
Right, right. Or again, like maybe approve the cut and, like, you know, his quote unquote performance and things like that, but he wouldn't actually have to go there. So you maintain control over the final product that yeah. wouldn't, without actually having to be there to do it, I guess.
And to be clear, I have no idea if he is or isn't in the vault. He's just a fun
right.
person.
No, just an
to
example.
Use as an example.
Of course, yeah. Well, and he has a job 6 months out of the year that keeps him kind of busy. So, you know, yeah, if you want to go shoot a movie in October, that's not really going to be possible for the Chiefs. So, yeah, that was a good example there. You know, and just what happens if I leave CAA, Ashley? No, do I take my myself and my digital vaults and myself go with me? Or
I am assuming, based on my conversation with them, that because the client owns it, the client owns it. So I would think that if somebody leaves CAA,
yeah.
that they would take it with them.
One would hope that would be the case. Yes, exactly. So, you know, what, after doing all this reporting, I'm curious, you know, does it make you more optimistic? Does it make you more, what was your takeaway after diving into this world this week?
It seems like the us versus them mentality has shifted a bit away from, like, talent and writers and directors versus, like, the studios to an inside Hollywood versus the rest of the world. Like, people who are creating amateur content that might look like it was directed by a famous director, or might look like it's starring a famous actor, and deep fakes, those sorts of things. So I think it's, the mindset has shifted a little bit to, yes, there are still things we need to, like, figure out in our own family, but we're a team
right.
against this, like, broader world scale concern.
Yeah, we're stronger together than having, you know, different coalitions within our own ranks kind of thing. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a great piece. You also lay out things that are currently afoot legislatively, perish the thought, to help talent, both in the U.S. And as you mentioned, in the EU as well. So a lot of legislation being put forth. Again, it's an evolving field. It's not going to be one piece of legislation and done, you know, Ashley, and we've solved it. You know, that's not going to be really the case here. But you lay out what's currently afoot for people to check out over in Ashley's Dealmakers column over to theankler.com. And Ashley, hope to see you again soon. And thanks for joining us on the pod today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And over at the box office, we have the second week of Civil War likely taking the title again. There's a few other new challengers out there. Civil War is, of course, A24's first real big budget swing, a reported $50 million budget, although the company did sell off some rights to some international territories to kind of offset that cost a bit. But Richard, they got into a bit of an AI slash false advertising kerfluffle this week, which, for those who don't know, just they released a series of new posters online showing scenes of destruction from places like Las Vegas, Chicago, and LA that are, they're not in the movie. So that was interesting. And they were also created using AI and had things like cars with three doors, and they put buildings in Chicago in the wrong place and things like that. So that was interesting, all of which seemed like a slip up to me. People were talking about it, certainly, but using the terms false advertising and ripping off human artists isn't exactly a cool indie studio talk. Richard, what was your thoughts here in your column this week?
A minor kerfuffle on the posters, but it is a minor kerfuffle on a very hot button ground of a studio, which its entire identity is about being an artist studio. So that's not the place to be cutting artists out of the poster work there to have AI generated fake swan boats on there.
Right.
Also happening on the same week when Universal settled this lawsuit with these two young men who rented Yesterday's on the basis of a picture of Ana de Armas on the box, who was apparently in some scenes that didn't make it to the final version. And then, to their chagrin, discovered that she wasn't in the movie and sued Universal for that $8 that they spent on it. And the case stayed in court, and the judge refused to throw it out for over a year.
Yeah.
And was just settled on undisclosed terms this week. So
yep.
That false advertising can cost you a lot of legal fees down the line.
Be careful with that. Yeah, yeah. And, I alluded to the big swing on Civil War, and we'll see where it nets out. It's only been one weekend so far, so the story is still being written, Richard. But, this is a big step up for them. Their biggest opening ever, and all the other accolades that came around it. But it's a pivotal moment for A24 here. So what was your thinking on that in terms of what's ahead and the road behind us to a degree too?
Well, there's a very well-trod path for independent studios. And there's a reason why the lifespan of independent studios tends to be really short. Very few make it past 20 years. None make it 40 years. And certainly, there have been independent studios in Hollywood since the beginning of time. You had Charlie Chaplin and Mary Pickford forming United Artists, and Samuel Goldwyn started his own studio, and none of them tend to survive because there's a very well-established pattern that they have a little success and they start making bigger bets and bigger bets, and eventually a losing streak comes to everybody. Sooner or later, you work in this business and you're going to have a really bad year, and it just happens. And a bad year in film is fantastically expensive, and that is what takes these companies out of the business. And you look back at the history of Miramax, of Orion, of you can name 1,000 companies, Golden Globus, you can name 1,000 companies that went down this path. And when you take away all the indie talk and the edgy kind of razzle-dazzle around A24, and you look at the size of the movies they're making, it looks as though they are heading down a similar path and that their results may not be that different from that. They're making a lot of movies. We don't know what their budgets are, but there are a lot of movies that look like they're $50 million, $60 million, $70 million movie instead of the $4 or $5 million movies that brought them to prominence. And predictably, only a few of those are really breaking out and making a lot of money. So as one who really prays for the health of our theatrical business and the indie world in particular, it's concerning.
Yeah, and it's zooming out a little bit here, it is an interesting time, and you and I were talking about this before the podcast, but you have like someone like Neon also in the space, who's also, in this A24 and Neon were probably in a similar level of, budget and business model. And A24 is certainly stepping up with Civil War. They still have smaller films coming out. They have a few smaller films coming out in May and June, in fact. So it's not all, all big budget all the time, but they're reaching a little bit higher on the rung there, but it's interesting to observe. And we have also, we should mention Lionsgate, which is a company that got up, was not an old school studio and, kind of came out of the 80s and 90s there for sure. But they're about to have a stock split in May, finally, to become an independently traded movie studio, Richard. So that's going to be also something to kind of keep an eye on in terms of an advancement in the movie business. So
yeah, and in theory, there's this game you can play that Lionsgate is very good at. In the end, it's like you have this movie and you sell the Bulgarian rights for $150,000 and Window 3 for another $2 million and you can make it. That can be done and you can grind out profits that way. And I think Lionsgate has had a lot of success with that with their lower things. When you're betting $50 million, it gets a lot harder to make your money back in that manner if you don't have a big box office number also.
Right. Something to definitely keep an eye on. But over at the Marquee this weekend, Elaine, some new titles out there. Can I interest you in Abigail, Elaine?
Scary, right? Pass.
Your pass? Can I get a trademarked Elaine Lowe, "I'm sure it's fine" pull quote for a horror
I'm
movie?
Sure it is fine. They all look fine. I just can't see them or else I won't be able to sleep for the next month.
fair enough. This one is tracking around 12, maybe 14 million somewhere in there. So we'll see not exactly a mega number, but we'll see how it transpires at the box office. There's also a new Guy Ritchie pick, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which is tracking around 6 or 7 million, and a new Crunchyroll pick as well. So we'll see how it goes. Elaine, do you have your Challengers ticket for next weekend yet?
hey, I'm organizing a group outing to see it. So
they could use
look,
it.
Look, me
they
at the movies. It. Who would have thought?
All right. Objectively speaking, I'm asking this question. I've written about it in the newsletter and it is what it is. But is there any advertising for this movie in LA? Do you see driving around?
No, but I see it. Okay, here's where right. the advertising for Challengers manifests. Zendaya and the crew have like her co-stars have been yeah. to like every major and somewhat minor tennis tournament in okay. the last like 3 months. So right. I see her and her fabulous outfits pop up in my feed at like Monte Carlo, which is a clay season tournament for those
thank
of our
you.
Listeners.
Thank you, Lane. Yes.
Sean. Mm. You know, she was at Indian Wells last month. Yeah, it's been great. It's been great for the tennis community.
All right. Well, we shall see if it's great for the movie-going community at large. I was just looking at, you know, the quorum tracking data, which take it as you will, but, you know, it was essentially, this is from about 2 weeks out of release date. The movie was at 27th place on their awareness chart with their tracking with the public. So,
man.
And I had a conversation at lunch with somebody this week. You know, I don't see posters in the subway here. I don't see, and this is Zendaya. She is the co-star of the, you know, she's Zendaya. Secondly, she's the co-star of the largest film of 2024 so far that just came out, you know, in March. And I'm like, why am I not seeing this wall to wall? But anyway, I'll see.
I don't know. I feel like Instagram is going nuts for Zendaya and Challenger. So we'll see how that translates.
They're not reaching the mid 40-year-old white guys, I guess. I don't know. Richard, any thoughts here?
I mean, Amazon's got to watch its money carefully.
That's it.
Can't just be buying posters all over the place.
No free rides for people around here anyway.
Look, if she just gets like a few thousand more people to join tennis and start playing, I'll be happy. Look, I appreciate what Zendaya is doing for us tennis people out here.
The Elaine Lowe agenda. That's it. All right. Fair enough. Richard, before we go this week, I do want to touch on, you had a really fun column this week of 50 inevitabilities in Hollywood, which are a really fun list to go through. Just In honor of tax week. Yes. Hopefully both of you got your taxes in. So just as death and taxes are inevitabilities in life, these are inevitabilities in Hollywood that you will face at some point in your tenure in Hollywood. I'm going to start off with, people always want to know, you know, how do movies get made? And, you know, the great line you had on this one was, they will always need a star attached, just not the one you have attached. So that will happen to you in your career in Hollywood. So very true, Richard. Give me a couple of your other favorites on the list here.
So every Monday morning, Hollywood gathers to go over the results of the previous weekend. Sure. And every Monday morning, they will draw the wrong lesson why something was an unexpected surprise hit and say, because we had a left-handed star or whatever right. it is. And they will flood the theaters. 3 years later, you will see 20 movies with that quality all
with
come
left-handed
out.
Left-handed stars,
all,
yeah.
Right. All flop.
Yeah, no,
because
work.
They're all
yeah.
based on. And on the flip side, when something is a unexpected bomb, it will never be because the movie was bad.
No.
People just didn't want to see it. It will be because it had a left-handed star, or it had it had two stars whose names started with C, or it was set in Wyoming, and people hate Wyoming movies. Or
it's a tennis movie, and it's oh no, I'm sorry, Elaine. That'll be the takeaway. If it'd be a hit. We need more tennis movies, Elaine. That'll be the takeaway. Yeah. Trust me. There you go.
I would be on board for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
A new rule will be born, and anything conforming that will be banned for the next 1,000 years.
Exactly, right. We can only do that. All right, what else you got, Richard?
A newly installed studio heads will always embarrass themselves, suddenly having a studio to play with and the most glamorous industry in the world fawning over you seems to go to people's heads. And,
oh, I can't think of any recent examples.
I've never,
Richard.
No examples of that, Richard. You're making that up.
In fairness, I'll say it happens to them all. The true cost of a project will remain a mystery till the end of time. That will be the one thing you will never know about Hollywood, how much any film actually cost.
Oh, well, the budget? Yeah, no, that's definitely, yeah, never that way. Well, I love this. Your best films will come out after you've left the studio, and your next one was, and your successor will take credit for it. So that was also.
Exactly. And you will be seated at the San Vicente Bungalows next to whoever you screamed at in a meeting.
Of course, yeah, right. That's yeah, the way it goes. All right, give us one for the road here, Richard. One more.
Here's a little rule of films, a dumb rule, but you'll find this one is actually true. Movies with the names of months in the titles will always fail, and movies with the names of seasons will always be hits.
Oh, okay.
Wait, give us examples.
January Man.
January Man. Wow, Kevin Kline.
Whales of August. Woody Allen's October.
You had a caveat for Born on the 4th of July, though, right?
Wasn't Born on the 4th of July, because that's referring to a holiday.
The holiday. It wasn't the month.
It's referring to a specific day, not the month. And The Fall Guy.
The Fall Guy coming out in a few weeks. Not seasonal, but still we'll take it.
You know. It'll be a hit. So
yeah, there we go. All right, fantastic. Well, you can go check out Richard's full list of all the lessons and truisms of our industry there at theankler.com. And speaking of the box office, of course, I will do my usual Sunday night analysis into this weekend's box office in my wake-up column. And plus, just a note, next week, we will see how much our beloved cable TV bundle continues to melt in Q1 with Charter, Comcast, and Verizon all releasing subscriber numbers. I'll dive into all that information in the wake-up, get some new official Peacock subscriber numbers from Comcast, and see just how many of those reported NFL playoff game subscribers stuck around. So you can check that out next week. And of course, you can get my full breakdown of the Netflix Q1 numbers and this Friday's edition of The Wake Up at theankler.com, which makes for a fine weekend reading, or just come for the gifts. All good either way. Elaine, of course, you'll be back with a new column next week for Serious Business. The weekly column, is this you're getting?
Getting on board? A weekly column every week.
Every week. All right. Well, Elaine will surprise us as always, as will Mr. Rushfield, all of which you get as part of your Ankler subscription over at theankler.com. And again, you can email us here anytime at podcasts@theankler.com and follow on the socials at The Ankler. Richard, Elaine, always a pleasure. And a thanks to Ashley for joining us today as well. And the biggest thanks goes out to you as always for listening. We'll see you next time.